Hello, everyone, and welcome to Heard on the Street, Street Fights podcast, where we uncover the stories behind the companies and, more importantly, the people that constitute this sector of media and advertising that we all call local. So where are they from? What makes them tick? What business and life lessons can we draw from that? So I'm Mike Boland, lead analyst at Street Fight, and our guest today is David Mim, a longtime friend, industry colleague, and thought leader in local SEO, and most recently the newly minted VP of Product Strategy for ThriveHive. So we talked to David from our studio in San Francisco about that journey, what he's learned from it, and what we can all take away from it. So here's our discussion with David Mim. So David, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Awesome to be here. Followed along with your existing guests to date, and really honored to be one in that sequence.
Nice, and we're glad to have you. So we have a lot to talk about, including diving deeper into everything I just mentioned. But first, let's start with the present. So tell us a bit about yourself and your new role at ThriveHive.
Sure. Yeah. So I joined ThriveHive earlier this month in October 2018, and My new role, I think VP of product strategy can go a lot of different ways, right? So I think primarily in terms of my internal role, it's kind of evangelizing SEO and sort of, I would say even more broadly than that, sort of search best practices for our small business customer base. We're exclusively focused on not just small businesses, but actually very small businesses. So like, you know, a couple of employees maybe, very small marketing budgets. So kind of thinking about what the things that they can do, knowing those resource limitations are and trying to build those into product. And then besides that, also to kind of evangelize what those practices are to the wider sort of marketing community and small business community. So, doing things like these podcasts and webinars and speaking at the events that, you know, you and I see each other at. So, so kind of twofold, like both in terms of internal sort of, like I said, evangelism and strategy, and also trying to, you know, be transparent about what those things are to the external world.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. When I heard this, it made perfect sense to me. And for the audience's benefit, just as background, like for those unfamiliar, ThriveHive has always had kind of strong audit functionality, especially going back to really the closely roots in kind of diagnosing and optimizing social media presence. And about a month ago, it brought a lot of that functionality to Google My Business through its Grader product. Yep. So I can see your knowledge with the latter, among other things, really being a great fit for the company's expansion and positioning. And we'll definitely get into a lot of that. But as we like to do on this show, we kind of hit rewind and work our way back to the present. So let's start at the beginning of your career and really kind of how you got into this world of, you know, search marketing and especially local. What's like the David Mim superhero backstory?
super. Like, let's get rid of that, sort of adjective on the front end. But my backstory is so I started out, I fairly stereotypically threw all my gear in a station wagon and drove out to California in the mid 2000s and worked at an ad agency for a couple months and realized that I didn't really like working for enterprise clients that much. We had, like, no offense to the ad agency or the client that I was on, but it's just like it wasn't too much fun for me. And happened to get connected through a friend to a small law firm in the Bay Area and ended up doing their marketing. You know, I was their sort of first full-time in-house marketer as a 24 or 5-year-old, whatever I was. And the partner in the firm who hired me about a year and a half in was like, you know what, you're doing an amazing job for us. You can have this job for as long as you want, but I really think you should go out and start your own business and do this for other small businesses. And so it was an amazing sort of jumping off point. I think we'll maybe get to this a little bit later on, but I'm a golfer and through the classic sort of offline business networking, kind of made my way through a bunch of country club guys who all had their own businesses. And initially I was doing kind of web design, primarily web design and even like print newsletters, that sort of thing, yeah. Print flyers. And eventually a couple of them were like, hey, do you know anything about this SEO? We've heard something about Google, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I didn't really know that much about it. I actually ran at the time I was still running a college basketball website where I sort of predicted where teams would get seated for the NCAA tournament. And so my first exposure to SEO was actually that, because somebody emailed me about like some random question. And I said, well, how, like, that's weird. I'm in, you know, at the time I was in Massachusetts, like you're in Florida. How did you like come across this? It was just supposed to be a hobby site for my buddies. And he was like, you're ranking number two on Yahoo for NCAA tournament. And I was like, oh, okay. So that was my first intro to SEO. So I was like, I don't really know that much about it, but I can probably figure it out. So I read a bunch of stuff online, you know, at the time it was SEO Moz, now Moz, beginner's guide to SEO, and started going to conferences, and kind of things just kind of took off from there. You know, Google came out with the 10 pack in, I think it was 2007, and it was, there were really only a handful of us, myself, Mike Blumenthal, Andrew Shotland, Will Scott, just a few other guys and women as well, Mary Bowling, who were paying attention to local at that point. And all of us were just like, whoa, this is pretty crazy. This is something totally different. Google's obviously putting a lot of resources into this. And so we all, I mean, almost to a person at that point, just decided to specialize in local, because it just seemed to us like this fits so many, you know, this checks so many boxes for our small business clients, and it's going to be a big deal. So that's kind of how I got into the space. And yeah, kind of ever since then have been, as Mike Blumenthal likes to say, all local all the time. So. Yeah.
Yep. Nice. And that's definitely our first country club marketing kind of path to local that we've heard on this show.
Right.
Also,
right.
Some interesting kind of like seeds planted or like themes early on, as you often see in superhero backstories, like in terms of, you mentioned like helping out those guys with like some of their just like simple websites or newsletters, which has some, I think, thematic ties to what you ended up doing with Tidings. So speaking of which, kind of what happened after that? I mean, we have, you know, getlisted.org. The Moz acquisition, and then on to Tidings. I might be missing a few steps, but what's kind of the remaining path before we go deeper on some of those learnings?
Yeah, sure. That's myself and a couple others, you know, in the late aughts. I don't know what we're calling them these days, but you know, we felt ourselves kind of going through the same steps as we were giving consultations to our clients or whatever, and so. I and a business partner started Get Listed, and the idea was to kind of, you know, streamline the process of claiming your business on all these various websites, Google and Yahoo, and yes, Yahoo was still a thing at the time, Microsoft, Yelp, Foursquare, all these sites, right? And so we kind of tried to streamline that process, grew the, quote, business to a scale of about, we were doing about 100,000 lookups a month by the time it kind of, mid 2012, and it was getting to the point where, frankly, we were at a scale where I figured we sort of needed to raise money or sell, because it was getting to be too overwhelming for myself and the couple developers that we had. So talked to a few people. Rand Fishkin's been a friend of mine, founder and former CEO of Moz. So he and I had been talking for a while, and you know, Rand actually did make the decision to go out and raise money. And so, you know, one of his kind of potential targets all along was thinking about acquiring Get Listed. So that worked, you know, worked to our advantage. We had another couple of offers unsolicited, actually, which sort of sped up the process a little bit, which was, you know, super lucky, kind of right place, right time. But Moz ended up seeming to be the best fit, and we moved Get Listed over there and kind of work for a couple of years to transition that into what's now Moz Local. So that's kind of the end of that arc. I was with Moz for about 3 years trying to help them build that business, which I think we did, you know, pretty successfully. We were, you know, I don't know the exact number. You could go back and read Sarah Bird's kind of annual report for the year I left, but it was we were something around 85,000 paid locations when I left, if I recall. And then, yeah, so it took some time off and was like, you know what, I definitely want to work. And we had moved a little bit more upmarket with Moz Local. We had gone after some enterprise clients and had great success with them. But my passion was really around local businesses, small businesses. And so really focused, you know, that was sort of what I focused on during my time off, was like, where do these guys need the most help? And to your point, like, you know, my experience with them actually started out as much broader than just search or just website stuff. And, you know, newsletters are something that really works as a marketing tactic, right? The ROI of email is like, you know, 40 to 1. most of the company, it kind of resonated with me when I saw it. I don't know if you had any hand in these studies, but you know, some of the BIA Kelsey studies, street fight studies around, you know, where do merchants need the most help? And it's like coming up with content and, you know, finding time to send an email and dealing with all those logistics. So with Tidings, the idea was, it still is, to kind of take the time spent on a newsletter from, let's say, an hour and a half, which is what I was spending on my own newsletter before we kind of released our product, down to a couple minutes, where you kind of, you know, you can kind of accumulate articles throughout the week. Anything that you've already shared on social media, we just effectively repackage that in an email. You can make a few tweaks and you can send it out to your list. And that's really the goal. So, you know, trying to stay top of mind with your audience, and as a local business, you know, hoping to kind of capture some of that repeat business that I think is still a huge untapped opportunity for not just, you know, not just Thrive5, but the sort of small business software industry writ large. So
absolutely. And a few different points there. One is that you're absolutely right. Saving time is such a currency for local businesses. So tapping into that, I think, is brilliant. And also email as a marketing channel. It's always kind of ironic that all of the development in digital marketing, email remains, like, not only just in terms of effectiveness, but in spend. If you look at the pie chart of local media spending, email just remains. And it's very effective. You mentioned the ROI metrics. And it's also kind of along the lines of something else that surprises me, which is that if we pan back to all marketing, traditional included, direct mail is actually the biggest local spend. But just some of these, both in digital and traditional, these mediums that have been around for a while, despite all the advantages in messaging, everything happening in search, which we're going to get into in a bit, email remains a very strong marketing channel.
For sure. And, you know, it's one that you own, right? You own your customer. You own your customer list. You own that direct connection with them. And so you're not renting space on a social media site. You're not, you're not sort of at the whims of Google's algorithmic changes. It's something that's has a lot of potential as a direct connection. And of course, you know, one of the things that we want to do in the future with Tidings, and, you know, probably Thrive5 as well, is already doing, is kind of learning from how your customers are interacting with you and knowing what the right messaging is, when the right time is. I still think there's a lot of room for innovation there. Because again, it is a channel that you own, and it's something that you can continue to build equity in.
Yeah. Have you invented an acronym yet for, like, the SEO of email, like email optimization, EMO, or whatever it would be?
Yeah, I think maybe I'm too much in the weeds right now in product development to those epiphanies. But yeah, if you think of something, let me know.
Nice. So that's great. So we're actually going to pause for a commercial break. When we come back, more from David Mim. Hi, everyone. It's Mike Boland, lead analyst at Street Fight, and I'm here today to tell you about Artillery, which is a new publication and intelligence firm that's focused on VR and AR. Mobile AR, for example, has a large installed base of smartphones and real business models that are materializing around things like influencing local commerce. So we recommend that you go check out the site and its thought leadership of these key topics. And while you're there, you can sign up for the free Artillery Weekly newsletter. So head on over to artillery.co, that's Artillery without an E, and learn about some of the visually immersive technologies that could transform local commerce. So we're back. My guest is David Mim. So David, we were talking before the break about a lot of your background and kind of what brought you to today. So that kind of brings us to the present. So as we were talking about Upserve, a company called Upserve bought Closely, longtime leader in the local space with kind of a legend in the space, Perry Evans.
Definitely a legend. He deserves the superhero moniker much more than I do.
I agree. We want to get him on the show as well. And essentially to bring Closely to integrate with Thrive5, and that created, as I mentioned earlier, more of a comprehensive tool for local marketing, Closely being best of breed in social media. So it seems to me there's kind of an overall trend towards consolidation, and not necessarily consolidation in like M&A activity, but consolidation of functionality for like more of a holistic kind of integrated marketing stack, to use like some jargon. But, you know, now Greater kind of adds to that mix to kind of have GMB functionality. So that overall kind of trend, how is that playing out for Thrive5? And what's kind of the philosophy there about the ongoing growth of that, like, holistic stack?
For sure. So, I mean, from my perspective, you know, Mike Blumenthal and I have talked in some detail about this, but Google is really, you know, I won't say they're necessarily copying Facebook, but I think they're trying to kind of learn from Facebook's experience in the small business space and their successes, and really, you know, make the frankly the visibility on Google for the average small business is just way higher than it is on Facebook. And there just hasn't historically there hasn't really been kind of that recognition by the business and the level of sort of interactivity with your customers at Google. And so I think Google's really moving in that direction. So, you know, to me, it's a kind of a natural extension. This is before my time at Thrive5, of course, but like it's kind of a natural extension of everything Closely was doing. Like, hey, you probably want to know how your customers are interacting with you at Google in addition to, you know, at Facebook and on Instagram and on Yelp and everything else. So I think it's a natural sort of progression of the, excuse me, of the product there. But in terms of, you know, in terms of kind of greater specifically, I think it's, you know, that's really our sort of toe in the water. That's our first pass at a Google My Business focused view of search. And I think we'll probably talk about this as well, but like, you know, increasingly the search results are becoming much more about knowledge panels and entities, which are two, I've realized, like totally jargony terms.
That's okay.
But they're much less about websites these days, right? So whether it's on a mobile phone or through a voice device, you know, Google does not want to display or read a series of websites to you, right? They want to just give you information. And in the local world, you know, that information largely comes from the structured data available or given to Google by the small business and Google My Business. So that's really the bet that we're making is that, you know, this trend is only going to continue. In my opinion, it's going to accelerate as we go more mobile, more voice. And so, you know, to help a small business maximize all of these amazing features that Google's released in Google My Business in the last couple of years, we see that as kind of an opportunity in the market, and that's where we're headed with Greater.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. And you're right about Facebook. They kind of quickly amassed an SMB like collection of presence very quickly. I mean, suddenly they have, I forget the most recent reported terms, but something like 70 million SMBs that have pages globally, not necessarily paid. The paid number is more around 2 to 3 million, which is still large in SMB terms. But the fact that they got that high makes them, I think, the most penetrated platform when it comes to SMB presence. Again, that's not all paid, but it's interesting too. And I've always thought, like, you know, how did they do that? And part of it, I believe, is the name recognition that, you know, small businesses don't have to make the mental leap because they're users of Facebook. They're also users of Google, but to have a page and presence there and maybe the lowered barriers. I mean, Google AdWords was always meant to be a democratized tool, but to the average SMB, there's still a lot of complexity there,
Too
right?
complex. Yeah, exactly. Yep. And I think Google's recognized that. I mean, I think that their new, you know, this is actually not part of Google My Business, but the new local service ad unit that they've released. I mean, that is, in my opinion, the, you know, golden goose or silver bullet or whatever term you want to use, for exactly the kind of product that a small business wants to purchase, right? Doesn't have to worry about ad copy or a landing page or what keywords to advertise on or bid management, any of these historical things that, you know, you really and still should be doing with AdWords. You know, those things are all out the window now, and he can just say, you know, I want 20 leads this month, and Google's like, okay, it'll cost you know, $100, and you're done, and that's it. And so I think from a paid standpoint, like that's a really smart product from Google, and I think we'll see more of them in the search results.
Interesting. Now let's get back to like the evolution of the SERP. So, you know, more AI, more functionality in the knowledge panel, Google trying to keep users on Google longer for obvious reasons. I know you've been on top of this theme for a while. One kind of piece of thought leadership I've always thought was great and still stands today is the local search topography. So we'll actually probably put that on the article that accompanies this episode so people can see what we're talking about for those unfamiliar. But anyway, kind of what's the high level explanation of that like evolution of the SERP and what should marketers know in terms of how it affects their plans? Like for example, you've said in the past to spend more time with on SERP optimization instead of on site optimization, stuff like that.
And I would say, you know, that's really a fairly recent trend. I still think that especially outside of local. Like if you're a software company, you know, your website is probably still sort of the primary destination for customers. But, you know, what I've seen with the small businesses, and I also work with a large hospital here in Portland, you know, customers are interacting with knowledge panels these days at a rate of 3 times what they're interacting with, you know, the contact page on your website. And so it's really becoming a much more, you know, not just the information that, you know, sort of research focused information that, that searchers are going for and Google's presenting right there on the SERP, but the actual, you know, transaction, or at least facilitating the transaction, is happening on the SERP. So, you know, your website is still, I've one thing, a theme that I've tried to reiterate that I don't know has resonated all that well in the wider SEO industry is that, you know, I really feel in the future that your website is the ideal website from Google's perspective is basically an XML feed, right? It is just, here's all of the stuff we do in a somewhat reasonably structured format. If we're relevant for a given, you know, keyword, you know, show that information in a knowledge panel or in a card of some kind on the SERP, and facilitate the transaction, you know, whether or not somebody comes to our website. I think that's Google's view of like what they would like the world to be within a couple years. And I don't know that that's, you know, again, that may not be true for non-local industries, but the reality is there's only so much stuff that a local business is really going to put out about themselves, right? And so, you know, your insurance agent kind of has a stock list of services. Your restaurant, you know, has a menu, which now you can upload in Google My Business, right? So the website as a destination, I think, is kind of a – it's becoming a historical artifact in some ways for the average local business.
Or it's becoming one of those kind of classic kind of vanity pieces for small businesses. As we know, small businesses love their face on the park bench and the full page yellow page ad. And there's a little bit of that too, probably, in addition to the functionality in terms of that SERP optimization as well. But going one level deeper, in viewing this trend over time that started with the one box and the extension that became the knowledge panel and what we used to call universal search, it's interesting. And you mentioned it's they're moving towards just giving like the right answer as opposed to here's 10 websites. It seems like that is aligned. I'm not sure if it's deliberate on the part of Google in terms of some of the other technological advancement we're seeing in things like voice search and visual search, which are very conducive to just getting one answer. Do you think that's deliberate on the part of Google in terms of preparing for that world?
I absolutely do. I mean, I think voice, well, so both mobile and voice have been central to Google's sort of product strategy for the last almost 10 years. You know, the former search chief, Amit Singhal, you know, famously lived on his phone, didn't use a desktop computer for 2 years, right? And so I think that that's really informed their mindset. And so, yeah, so even if you're on a phone and you do have some ability to, you know, review results visually, it's not anything like a desktop, right? You have, you're not going to scroll six scrolls to find a website, right? It's going to be something that's just an answer on your phone. Voice, right? Again, same thing. There's no way your Google Assistant is going to read back the title tag and meta description of 5 websites and ask you to pick one. Like, that's a horrible user experience. So Google has to, Google and Apple and, you know, Bing, anybody who wants to play in the future of search, I think has to figure out how do we make these results, you know, super concise and either visible on a smaller and smaller screen, even something as small as an Apple Watch, or short enough of a voice response that that it's actually going to be a good experience for the searcher.
And while we're talking about this trend of like the ascension of the importance of the SERP and the correlating kind of demotion of websites, for lack of a better way to put it, Rand Fishkin, your friend Rand, gave a presentation at Brighton SEO recently that caused lots of waves in the search world. I think it was titled "The Infuriating Future of Search," because this kind of science that we've all come to know is kind of changing. And you kind of see that partly as a natural evolution, and let's kind of go with it, and partly as, like, you're right, this has been happening. What are kind of your overall thoughts? For those that don't know Rand's kind of premise.
Sure. So, Rand sort of framed it as there used to be some mythical deal between Google and content creators that, you know, content creators would put content out and Google would send them traffic. And, you know, in my view and in Mike Blumenthal's view in our conversation, you know, that deal never existed, right? Google's deal has been to make money since they went public in 2004, and that's only deal. So,
It's not a two-sided marketplace,
right? This is Google's product. This is their business, and we're along for the ride. And to the extent we can make it work for our own businesses, like, that's great. But Rand is and other SEOs really have been coming at search from a sort of very classic. Okay, we're gonna, you know, someone is gonna type in a keyword and our website is going to show up and someone's going to click on that website. And it's a very sort of traditional funnel.
Yep.
And for those of us in local, I mean, we've seen this literally for 10 years since the authoritative one box first came out. It's like, no, I mean, you know, our clients were getting phone calls just from before, you know, mobile search really blew up. Like, you could get a phone call just from somebody seeing your information on a desktop search result. So, I think for us in local, it's always been about capturing the prospect or the customer much more so than worrying about what the traditional search funnel has looked like.
Yeah. And there's also branding and impressions that can happen on the SERP if you're kind of coming at it from that angle.
Exactly.
So we're going to pause for another commercial break. When we come back, more from David Mim.
Hi everyone, it's Mike Bolin, lead analyst at Street Fight, and I'm here today to tell you about Artillery, which is a new publication and intelligence firm that's focused on VR and AR. Mobile AR, for example, has a large installed base of smartphones and real business models that are materializing around things like influencing local commerce. So we recommend that you go check out the site and its thought leadership of these key topics. And while you're there, you can sign up for the free Artillery Weekly newsletter. So head on over to artillery.co, that's Artillery without an E, and learn about some of the visually immersive technologies that could transform local commerce.
So we're back. My guest is David Mim. So David, before the break, we were talking about a lot of the different trending and your thought leadership around the evolution of the SERP, a lot of work-related stuff. What we also like to do on this show is find out a little bit more about our guests kind of on a personal level. And one thing that it's always struck me about you is you've been kind of a longtime Portland guy. You told us about your kind of geographic kind of movement earlier on in the show, but you've kind of settled in Portland for a number of years. And you're very active in that community in terms of like Portland activity and SEO groups and all that. So kind of tell us about what it's like to live and work in Portland.
Sure. I'll be very candid. It used to be a lot better, but I think that's a sentiment shared by just about anyone who's lived in a city for as long as I have. Yeah, I've been here over 10 years at this point.
You hear that a lot from people in Denver, like your new colleague, Perry Evans.
Exactly.
Not necessarily him, but a lot of people I know there are saying there's a massive influx of people. The rest of the world has discovered finally what we all knew.
Exactly. So it was totally a hidden gem when I moved up here in 2008. The cost of living at that point, well, it's probably still true today. It's about probably half of what it was in the Bay Area and, maybe a third less than Seattle, something like that. But we've got all the kind of big city problems now. But we do have some kind of unique benefits that still makes it a great place to live. I think our food scene is unbelievable here.
Yeah.
The number of great restaurants that you can eat at get an entree and a beer for under $20 is just phenomenal. So we're really blessed on that regard. I'm a big craft beer and also craft coffee guy. So, I can't remember the last time I had a Coors Light. There's just no reason. There's no reason to with all the great options we have around here. And, we're only about an hour. My house is probably an hour and a half from Mount Hood and an hour and a half from Cannon Beach on the coast. And so it's like, if you need to get away for the weekend or a long weekend or whatever, it's still like an incredibly rich place to do that. And we've got the high desert Bend is a great small city, which is also experiencing some growing pains. But totally different climate, totally different culture. That's only a 3-hour drive over the mountains. So it's really it's a great spot. The tech community here, I think, is also somewhat unique. I think we're still, I don't think we're on kind of that same Silicon Valley, Boston, Seattle type of level yet, and maybe not even, you know, Austin or Denver. We're kind of the next level down. And so it's still a fairly supportive, you know, community in terms of, you know, resources and mentorship and all that stuff, which is really nice. That's changing a little bit because Amazon made a big acquisition about 18 months ago. You know, Google and Microsoft are starting to get some presence here. eBay is building its presence. So, you know, it's becoming a little more sort of enterprise techie, but it's still a fairly small kind of startup world here, which I think is great. And sort of the collegiality and the mutual support, it's not nearly as cutthroat as the stories I hear from the Bay Area.
Absolutely. Now, speaking of Bay Area and speaking of craft beer, next time you're in SF, let me know and I'll buy you a beer. I'm a minor investor in my friend's gastropub called the Monk's Kettle. It's one of the first kind of craft beer places in the Mission here in San Francisco.
Oh, that's rad. Cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. So moving on in the same thread of like interesting things about you, we're going to go right into our lightning round. So what's something about you that few people know about?
Yeah, it depends on, you know, how much you've talked to me at a conference, but I'm a fairly serious golfer. If I could, I'd play 5 days a week probably, but you know, I'm happy to get a couple times a month at this point. But I'm really into golf architecture, actually, in addition to just playing golf. So kind of, you know, historical courses and tree removal and bunker restoration and those kinds of we could talk for hours about any of those. So anybody who's traveled to, you know, any of the great links courses over in Scotland and Ireland, you know, played courses on the Monterey Peninsula, those sorts of things. Like, we could have a great conversation over a beer at Monk's Kettle. So, yeah.
Yep. And your affinity for links style courses has some interesting wordplay with your career choice with links and SEO and all that. What's a profession you'd want to have if you weren't doing what you're doing now? Probably golfer.
Sure. Yeah, right. I was going to say maybe general manager at a, you know, top flight golf facility or something. Realistically, probably architecture, which I went to school for grad school for a year. And just a number of things kind of didn't work out. It turned out to be a blessing in disguise because I would have graduated right into the Great Recession. So would have been a hard time to get a job as an architect. But I think that's probably I still have a lot of passion around that. And that's what I'd be doing if I weren't doing this.
Mm-hmm. And regarding golf, before we move on, I think you're probably too modest to say it, but I read somewhere that you're a scratch golfer.
I am. I'm probably closer to a 2 right about now, but okay. I had a few good rounds this summer. I actually played with Neil Polacek and Ted Paff down in your neck of the woods this summer, and I think I'll never be able to play them for money based on that round. So,
so what's a company or tech startup? It could be current or just historical that you think would be most exciting to be part of, like at the moment of inception, like the HP Garage or like, you know, Woz and Jobs at the Homebrew Computer Club, stuff like that.
Right. I think. For me, just maybe my lens is a little bit sort of narrow, but I think Instagram might be that company. I feel like they I don't know if this was intentional. I actually have done almost no research on kind of how they started or anything like that. But, you know, it feels like there was this sort of location war happening with Foursquare and Gowalla, you know, in the late aughts. And
Bourbon,
I'm sorry?
Bourbon. That's what Kevin Systrom started, right?
Was it? Yeah. Okay. So you know much more about that history. But it feels like he and the early Instagram team, like, really saw the best parts of what those companies were doing. And the fact that this was all happening on a phone. I mean, you know, the act of a check-in.
Yeah.
You know, is great, but the phone as with a camera, like, that to me was like a really amazing insight. And the fact that they were able to scale as quickly as they were was, I think, really impressive. So I think that would be a fun place to be on the ground floor.
Absolutely. And it's one of those insights that seems obvious in retrospect, but at the time it was very prescient, and not knowing the advancement of the optical equipment and all of our cell phones would really just align with their vision. And it's just absolutely, it's very meta to say so, to talk about podcasts on other podcasts, but I'm a big fan of Reid Hoffman's Masters of Scale podcast. His guest recently was Kevin Systrom. I'd recommend that episode.
Yeah, cool.
Who's someone from the business world that you admire most?
Interesting. I don't know. I don't necessarily have like a CEO hero or anything like that.
Right.
It's probably the guy who hired me at the, you know, this managing partner at a law firm in the Bay Area. Just because I feel like he, you know, he's running a very successful business, employing, you know, 20, 25 people. Employee morale was always super high. You know, loves what he does, has a great quality of life. I just think he's a personal friend of mine, but also I think probably a business hero. So I think, you know, my lens is really around like helping small businesses, and I'd love to help, you know, more, you know, fresh law school grads become him over time, just as an example. So
that's awesome. Most of the answers we get are like Elon Musk, Steve Jobs. Right. So I love the unsung hero answer.
Yeah, right. Totally. I think that, you know, the small business owner that's, you know, employing a dozen people and has a great quality of life, that's my hero. I want more of those in our society.
Mm-hmm. So earlier we talked about superhero as kind of just like a joke, but what superhero power would you most want to have?
Man, probably the ability to roll back time a little bit. You know, not just on a personal level, but you know, correcting some obvious mistakes. You know, that we made with, you know, Getlist, that I've made with Tidings, that we made at Moz. I think that, you know, hindsight is 2020, and man, if there were a way to make it, you know, to actually act on that hindsight, I think that'd be pretty rad.
Absolutely. Yeah. So lastly, what are some of your personal goals for the remainder of 2018 and then going into 2019?
Get through the holidays, man. It's always a stressful time. You know, it's not actually, my wife and I actually host both of our families here. It's a lot of fun, but it's just, you know, kind of exhausting. So get through the holidays. My wife and I are actually expecting our first kid in February.
Ah,
so that's
congrats.
Really my goal is to take care of all the, you know, housework before that and really focus on that next year. So,
baby-proof everything.
Yep. Well, maybe not even that yet. We're talking about like, hey, let's clear out all of our old files so there's actually room for the crib, you know, that kind of thing. So, yeah.
So that's great. And that's actually all the time we have. That's a great place to end it. I want to thank you, David, for spending time with us.
Yeah, awesome to be here. And again, thanks for the opportunity.
Sure. And thank you all for listening, and stay tuned for future episodes of Heard on the Street. You can find us on streetfightmag.com. Subscribe on Apple Podcast. Also stay tuned for lots more writings, multimedia, and events from Street Fight. So this has been Heard on the Street. I'm Mike Boland. Thanks for listening.